on People of Interest. We're back here, and I have a special interview with Gary Neal, who's the executive director of the Council of Canadians, and he's on the line with us to talk about recent information released by the Council of Canadians. They had a press release yesterday regarding information on the robocall scandal and sort of the extent of how there's some hard evidence here of this misdirection. Now, I guess could you give us more detail of this study, this recent poll that was conducted?
Good morning. Happy to.
Thanks, Gary.
Ecos Research, which is a major research and polling company, did a study. We are supporting actions in seven ridings in Canada, including Elmwood Transcona, where individual electors are claiming that as a consequence of these voter suppression techniques, the outcome of the election in their ridings was affected. So in order to try to quantify what was the extent of the calling and what was their impact, we sponsored this research study from Ecos. So they surveyed roughly 500 voters in each of the seven ridings and then did a comparison group of 1,500 in ridings that were less likely to have had the voter suppression. I mean, with Maynard, with the chief electoral officer, saying he's had reports from 200 ridings, it's impossible to find ridings where there were no calls. And what this showed is the following. The results are very clear on two counts. One, the calling was very widespread, far more widespread than press reports to this point have indicated. Based on this sample, we can conclude definitively that there were tens of thousands of these calls in the seven ridings. Two, they were targeted. You were four times, 3 to 4 times as likely to get the call if you had been identified as a supporter of the New Democratic Party, the Liberal Party, or the Green Party of Canada. So they were widespread, they were targeted. On the third question, which was the effectiveness, the data is far more fuzzy, but even at that, ECOS is prepared to conclude that the impact of these calls was measurable and significant, that it may have been 1.5% of eligible electors who were dissuaded from voting as a consequence of the calls. If you apply the margin of error to that 1.5%, you create a band of effect right from 0.8% to a high of 2.2%. And Elmwood Transcona, the margin of victory would be covered even at that minimum level of 0.8% effect of these calls.
And also, Winnipeg South was another contested riding, the one that I would be counted in, and that was only about 744 votes, I think.
Winnipeg South Centre would be affected at the mid-range point at the 1.5% and clearly at the top end as well. In fact, at the mid-range point, at the point that Ecos Research said, here is our best estimate of what the impact is, 1.5%, six of the seven ridings that are under challenge would have had sufficient number of voters choose not to vote as a consequence of these calls, to have overcome the margin. So Winnipeg South Centre was one of those at the 1.5%.
And are these was this poll done to ask people about calls like misdirecting, the polling station changes, or was it also counting like the harassing phone calls that we heard about where, people were pretending to be calling from, a Liberal Party?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's
We asked about both. The evidence with respect to the misdirecting calls is far more clear than the evidence with respect to harassing telephone calls. So in undertaking the statistical analysis, ECOS did not take into account a potential effect of the harassing call. So they only did of the misdirecting calls. And the reason for that, of course, is under the Canada Elections Act, what we have to demonstrate for on behalf of the individual electors who are the applicants here, we have to demonstrate that there was fraudulent, corrupt, or illegal practices. So it's very clear that calls misdirecting voters in these ridings, claiming to be on behalf of Elections Canada, or not clearly being identified on behalf of a political party, are fraudulent calls. The harassment calls are far more challenging to demonstrate that that is a fraudulent activity.
Mm-hmm.
So we've just, in the study, that we've just taken account in terms of the voter suppression of the impact of the misdirecting phone calls. And the evidence is also very, very clear there. That's, you know, on these first two counts, one, the extent of the calling, and two, the fact that it was targeted against people who earlier in the campaign had indicated that they would not be supporting the Conservative Party. Those two numbers are striking, absolutely striking. The third, when you begin to analyze the impact, is a far more challenging statistical issue. But even there, we're confident that when you look at all of the evidence that we've now adduced in these cases, that it's pretty compelling.
So it's some scientific evidence as opposed to just, you know, someone's word against someone else's word.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, while there's a lot of discussion yesterday around polling,
right.
Yeah. To do with the Alberta election, as you may have heard, where all the polling companies got it wrong,
yeah.
We would note that this is not polling in that sense, the sense of trying to determine trying to predict what the outcome of an election would be. This is determined to ask people, what happened to you?
Mm-hmm.
So it was a series of questions. What happened to you? Did you receive one of these phone calls? If so, you know, what was the impact? It was a behavioral study rather than the typical poll used in elections.
So what has been the response since the press release yesterday with the release of this info?
Well, of course, and we're not surprised at this, and I predicted it at the press conference. You know, all of us who were involved in this are being subjected to ad hominem attacks. You know, all of this dismissed as from the Council of Canadians' perspective, from the government perspective, arguing the Council of Canadians is just this radical left-wing organization that's seeking to overturn legitimate election results because they don't like the agenda of the current government. And
right.
Frank Graves of ECOS Research, he's being accused of being a Liberal Party hack, and
right.
and his results that should not be taken seriously. We have an affidavit filed from the president and CEO of a company called Stratcom Communications, which is heavily involved in voter identification, has done a lot of work for various political parties over the years, and he's being dismissed as an NDP hack. And so we haven't seen thus far anyone coming forward and saying, well, you know, let's talk about the analysis that's in the ECO study and let's review whether that's sound and so on. It's all been ad hominem attacks.
And some weird kind of, I guess, denials and misdirections they're not going to admit that this was done at all. Clearly, this was done really widespread. So, I mean,
I think it's leading inexorably in one direction. You know, we have adduced that. We will be adducing evidence. We've got an affidavit from a woman who worked at one of these calling companies in Thunder Bay.
Yeah.
And she was calling for 3 weeks during the election on behalf of local Conservative Party candidates all across the country. 3 days before the election, they were all told to reboot their computers. There was a new script coming up. And now they were making calls on behalf of something called the Voter Outreach Center to advise that Elections Canada had changed riding, had changed polling locations. We know in our seven ridings, there was only one polling station changed anywhere in the seven ridings That was in Vancouver, Vancouver Island North.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had evidence that says, look, if these kind of calls were being made, the only way they could be done is if somebody high up in a political campaign office who has access to the database and authority to spend money has authorized the campaign. And then finally, we have the evidence from ECOS that says these calls were targeted. They were targeted at non-conservative party voters. And so, I mean, it leads inexorably in one direction. There's really no other conclusion. Now, we don't have to draw those conclusions for purposes of the legal case.
Mm-hmm.
But now you've got the bigger political picture. And, of course, the council can draw that conclusion that inexorably it's leading in the direction of somebody pretty high up in the conservative party structure, campaign structure, must have been behind this widespread campaign.
So it's you don't think it could just be someone who is really a big supporter of the Conservative Party, maybe not an actual actor in the party, and this would be because they have the lists of all the,
absolutely,
you know, the sway of the voters.
Yes, you have to have had access to a database of voter information and telephone numbers. And that's the only way you can orchestrate this campaign. So that's why it couldn't be done by one rogue campaigner in Guelph, because presumably security systems are such that they would have access only to information about the Guelph riding, not all the ridings in the country. And you couldn't do it if you didn't have access to that database of information. That's critical to rolling out such a voter suppression campaign.
So with these contested ridings, if Elections Canada were to take this evidence at face value, you know, what would happen? Like, would there be a redo?
There's three tacks that this stuff is moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Ours, the support that we're giving to the individual electors who have launched legal challenges is under the Canada Elections Act. So that goes to a judge. That goes to court and a judge. And if the judge finds that there were fraudulent activities that affected the outcome of the election in the ridings, then they would annul the election results. And that would force a by-election to be called. Under the Canada Elections Act, it's unique. There's an automatic right of appeal to the Supreme Court. So this doesn't go through the normal kind of lengthy legal process. So if a judge finds one way or the other, there's an automatic right of appeal. You don't have to go through the Court of Appeal. You don't need to seek leave to appeal to the Supreme Court. It's automatically on the docket of the Supreme Court at its next sitting. So it'll be done very quickly. Elections Canada has no authority to annul results of an election. Their investigation is looking at whether there was criminal behavior, violations of the Canada Elections Act and criminal behavior. And if there is, if they can identify it and who was responsible for it, then they have the responsibility to carry forward that criminal, take the necessary actions against the individuals involved. But of course, the standard of evidence that you need to prove a criminal act is, of course, very high. It's beyond a reasonable doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where Elections Canada is going. What we have to prove is only on a lesser standard of what's called a balance of probabilities that this happened. The third tack, of course, would be, and we support all these three tacks, we're encouraging people to go to Elections Canada. We also support the calls for a public inquiry, because that may be the only way to actually connect all of the dots. And because there, of course, you're dealing with an open public process, and you don't have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, you don't have to prove on a balance of probabilities, it's really in the court of public opinion once you begin to have all of the evidence investigated. So we think all three tacks are important. But ours is directed at seeking to annul election results in seven ridings because we believe there's very strong evidence to show that there was widespread fraudulent calling and that it had a measurable impact sufficient to overcome the deficit between the first place winner and the second place finisher.
Is this unprecedented in Canadian politics, these kind of tactics?
It's absolutely unprecedented. There are no precedents at all for the kind of legal cases we're supporting. I believe personally that this is really about the slow introduction of U.S.-style politicking and campaigning into the Canadian political system. I don't think that we've seen this kind of widespread voter suppression before. I think it's only appeared first in the May 2011 federal election. There may have been isolated incidents before, but this is definitely a widespread campaign. And really, it's U.S. style campaigning moving north, and I regret that very, very deeply.
Now, I've seen coverage of this in the Globe and Mail and CBC, so it has gotten your press release has gotten out there. Do you think it's going to remain a topic, with this information from the poll coming out?
Absolutely, and I think that it will remain a topic because now the action is turning to the court. We've introduced all our evidence. The respondents to our application have 30 days in which they can put in their reply evidence, and then we have a period of time in which we can reply to the reply. Mm-hmm. And so over the next 6 or 8 weeks, I think we will continue to see public discussion about what happened in the May 2011 federal election. And I think this is very positive. We want it to be public. We think that we need to expose what happened. We need to have a public debate about these kind of really, anti-democratic election campaigning techniques.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Gary Neal, for coming on the program. Is there anything else you wanted to mention, just where people could get more info?
They can get more info from our website, canadians.org, and they can also get more information if they are interested on the Canada Elections website. They have some information there, and they have contact information if people want to continue to bring forward complaints.
All right. Well, thanks so much again, Gary.
Thank you.
And we'll be following this court case closely.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye bye. Okay. Once again, that was Gary Neal from the executive director of the Council of Canadians.